Tune for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online at 6:30 p.m.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with A. Lee Slane and Matthew Kearney. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement to press for action on the climate emergency. A. Lee, what has been going on in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Well, yesterday, Matt, and yesterday meaning, June 4th, folks in Baton Rouge held what's called the Gulf Gathering for Climate Justice and Joy. Now, you know, if you've been down to Louisiana, you know, it's just like lots of music and lots of festivals with music. But this one was a festival addressing climate justice, which is really cool. And according to WWNO, This gathering was designed to celebrate the area's unique culture while also having attendees work together to put forth solutions to combat climate change. It took place yesterday and it was hosted by the Gulf South for a Green New Deal, which is a network of more than 300 organizations across the region that has similar values and priorities addressing climate change, racial justice, and economic justice. So there was live music, workshops, free food, speakers from community members and organizers from Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. And the Healthy Gulf, they tweeted this out. They said, "We love our way of life in the Gulf South, and we deserve a future where we can sustain it." So they were celebrating both their culture, but their struggles, and they're fighting to have climate justice. So that's pretty cool.
I bet the food was fantastic.
And the music. It was probably hot and humid, but that's the way it is. But, you know, it's just a fantastic thing that is happening in the South in terms of addressing these three pillars, the climate justice, social justice, and economic justice. And it's really important work.
And great to hear that there is some climate justice activism going on in the far South.
It has to be. I mean, it's the hub for so many oil and gas industries, and not to mention just other toxic industries. So folks are struggling with health issues and just, you know, the ways in which money, the oil and gas money just influences Southern politics. So, they're on top of it and the folks are organizing and exercising people power.
On a less joyful note, Elise, I have a question. Has the Biden administration done anything right on climate? Can you think of one thing that this administration has actually done, I mean, gotten passed or executive order or, policy change that can be attributed to this administration that's going to cut emissions any notable amount?
I can't think of one thing. I cannot think of one thing. And as we talked about last time, their funding of, you know, their proxy war with Russia, helping Ukraine is amping up our climate crisis with the military emissions. So no.
I mean, there was an attempt to pass that Build Back Better Act. We talked about it on an earlier show and how it wasn't going to be the right thing, but it would have at least, you know, gestured toward the right thing, and that didn't get passed. And he's not trying to pass some other modified version of it. He's given up on that, it would seem. But he's doing go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and he's also not using his bully pit, you know, and so you have folks like Joe Manchin being able to really capture the agenda. And, you know, if I was president, I would be doing news conferences all the time and ragging that senator. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, so it's worse than just non-action. He's doing some of the wrong thing, sending the problem in the wrong direction. And, you know, exactly. I can name three things at least. One of them releasing a large amount of oil from the so-called Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And this is, of course, meant to keep gas prices down as global fossil fuel supplies are disrupted in the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Right.
But I think that climate activists would agree that oil should stay unburnt. And he is releasing it, and it's going to be burnt. 180 million barrels just for a temporary decrease in gas prices that might not have otherwise gotten burnt, that is now for sure going to get burnt. And even if it does decrease gas prices, 6 months from now, those gas prices are going to be right back up. Supplies,
yes, they will.
They're going to run out. Supplies are going to run out, and we're going to need to eventually, we will in fact need to stop burning oil. So releasing from the reserve now and burning more oil in the meantime is only making the broader problem worse in exchange for a short-term decrease in gas prices. And that's Biden's choice. He didn't have to do that.
No, he did not. And it's a political choice. And it's understandable. People are frustrated with the prices of oil going up. And, you know, it certainly strikes working class people harder. And it's, you know, and those who are, whose living is around having to, you know, drive trucks and cars and transportation. So it's tough. So I understand the politics of it, but I, you know, ultimately, you know, we have to really think about the effects, the broader effects, the long-term effects, and particularly with regards to our climate crisis.
Absolutely. And the politics of it, you know, he at one point must have thought that the politics of it were in favor of something that was more friendly to climate action. He said in a New Hampshire campaign speech in February 2020, this is a direct quote from Biden, "No more drilling on federal lands, period, 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 period," unquote. That's four periods in case you were counting. So that's what he said when he was campaigning. He must have thought that that was going to get him some votes. He must have thought that the politics were in favor of that at one time. Now, what has he done? That was Biden, the candidate. What has Biden, the president, done? Has he ceased drilling on federal lands? Nope. Nope. He has gotten drilling in both land and sea. So here's information on the land one. Here we go. The Interior Department said in a statement that it planned next week to auction off leases to drill on 145,000 acres of public lands in 9 states. That would be the first new fossil fuel leases to be offered on public lands since President Biden took office. Reading again from the New York Times. So on land, we've got 145,000 acres leased off for drilling.
Yes.
On sea. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Well, just to finish the, so I said land and sea. So on sea, Biden sought to suspend new oil and gas leases in federal oil and waters, a move the oil industry has maintained hurt production. Yet that policy was stopped by the courts. And Mr. Biden last year auctioned off more than 80 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico, the largest lease sale in history. That was another New York Times quote. So we've got the largest lease sale in history, 80 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico. Somehow we've gone from no more drilling on federal lands, period, 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 to drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, it sounds like Gavin Newsom here in California going ahead and continuing to pass out those oil and gas permits. And you know, I hate to mention his name. But former President Trump, one of the things he said early in his office was drill, baby, drill. Mm-hmm. I am not seeing any difference between him and Biden on this issue. So Biden is another drill, baby, drill president. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. And not to say that they are the same. They are not the same, a fascist and a neoliberal. They're close, but they're not the same. But nevertheless, the same effect. We are drilling, baby, drilling.
With regard to drilling on federal lands and increasing fossil fuel use, it's hard to see much daylight between them. They may be different in other respects from each other, but they're not different in this one, in this respect. I mean, if it had been Trump who had won the election, would we expect the policy to be different than what we're actually seeing? Would we expect that Trump would have done new leases on sea? Yes, I think so. Would we expect that Trump would have done new leases on federal lands? Yes, I think so. Would we expect that Trump would have released oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, ensuring that it would have been burnt, whereas had he not released it, maybe it wouldn't have? Yes, I think so. So would we have seen, you know, major emissions cutting legislation passed under Trump? Nope. And we're not seeing it pass under Biden either.
Yeah. And well, I mean, we could step back and say, well, maybe we wouldn't have this problem because Trump and Vladimir are really good friends. So so it's likely that, you know, we might not have seen this kind of oil crisis at all. Who knows? But nevertheless, you're right. The effects right now, you know, we are killing our planet. And we are killing our planet because we cannot get off of this oil and gas and fossil fuel use. And Republican, Democrat, they're both taking us to a very dangerous place.
So I said there were three at least things that Biden is doing that push things in the wrong direction on climate. Get ready for number three. He is proposing, President Biden is proposing to tax oil companies if they don't use the oil leases that they've taken out from the federal government. From an emissions point of view, a climate activist would say that's the wrong thing to do. We don't want to push them to use oil leases. We want to push them to not use oil leases. We want to keep oil in the ground. That's the chant that you hear at climate protests a lot of stuff, a lot of times. Keep it in the ground. We want to keep that oil in the ground. So the Biden administration is trying to not keep that oil in the ground by proposing this tax on unused oil leases. It seems they're operating from the viewpoint that more energy is better no matter where we're getting it from. But that's not so. And they know it's not so. It's as though they're willing to burn the planet in the medium term in order to have an easier time in the short term.
It's astounding. And, you know, the thing about it is we should be using our taxes to close these companies down to make it unprofitable for them to function. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And we are talking about all the wrong moves the Biden administration is making on our climate crisis. Speaking of oil and gas. So, you know, The Guardian recently reported that, quote, 28 of the largest oil and gas producers made close to $100 billion in combined profits in just the first 3 months of 2022, buoyed by oil commodity prices that soared following the turmoil caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Major fossil fuel businesses enjoyed a bonanza in the first quarter of the year, making $93.3 billion in total profits. Shell made $9.1 billion in profit from January to March, almost three times what it made in the same period last year, while Exxon raked in $8.8 billion, also a near threefold increase in 2021. End quote. That's a lot of money.
A threefold increase. That means they're making three times as much profit as they made last year?
And over a three-month period. Now we know that some of those profits, you know, are just going to lobbying that's intended to prevent any meaningful action on climate change. For example, for the 2021 to 2022 election cycle, Shell and Exxon are among the top lobbying climates of the Republican Party. Now, that's according to Open Secrets. They give money to the Democrats, and primarily they give money to Joe Manchin. He's actually the top recipient of this money. Shell PLC has raked out $7,200,000, ExxonMobil $6,820,000, and Chevron Corporation $6,450,000. So they're buying our electoral officials, and they are ensuring that they continue to profit from the destruction of our environment. Now, Open Secrets, just so you know, is, in its words, the nation's premier research group tracking money in U.S. politics and its effect on elections and public policy. Now, you can check out their important work at opensecrets.org, and you can find out, you can trace the money for yourself and see who's giving what and why they make the decisions that they make.
And they're a reputable source. They use the open in their name indicates they use publicly available documentation for this stuff. If folks are hiding things, then it's worse.
Exactly.
If things are being hidden, then it's worse than the numbers we just gave you. But those are some big numbers, Elise.
Yes, they are. And so that's also going to shareholders. And when you think about it, it's also going to the employees. So it's money that's not only, you know, a ridiculous sum of money that they're profiting from, but then it creates this sort of domino effect in terms of entrenching people's interest in the continuation of our fossil fuel, fossil fuel economies. So you got workers who are invested in it, you got shareholders who are invested in it, and you got politicians who are invested in it.
And when you have politicians who know that reliably, election after election, they can get very sizable campaign contributions from those oil companies, and they can make do without bold climate action, then guess what? You're not going to get bold climate action from those politicians. I mean, this is a reliable source of, even if it's a safe seat, the fact that they're getting those contributions election in and election out just makes them, just entrenches their entrenchedness, if you will. it keeps things the way they are. And that money is to prevent them from taking action. That's what that money is there to do, I think.
That's right. And so it's, you know, I don't want to say that we're stuck because we're not powerless, but it makes clear what kind of work we must do going forward if we are going to make sure that our climate crisis doesn't get worse.
Yeah, I know we're talking about a lot of politics and referring to elected officials today, and it's not really what Extinction Rebellion focuses on. We're a direct action organization and, you know, not an electoral politics organization. But why talk about this stuff? It's because it's making the case that direct action is necessary. I mean, we can still talk about the political situation. And when we do that, we notice that, Biden does not seem to be making any steps in the right direction. In fact, he's making steps in the wrong direction. Both Republican and Democratic senators and Congress people are getting substantial campaign contributions from the fossil fuel companies. It's hard to be optimistic about the political system just taking care of this on its own without some mass movement that puts serious pressure on them to do so.
That's right. And serious pressure we must put. We really have no choice here. And every day the news tells us exactly how much further along the fossil fuel industry is in ensuring that it continues to exist and to profit as long as it can.
Everything you said, Elise, based on that Open Secrets data that you read off, is absolutely right about what, you know, about the relationship of fossil fuel profits to lobbying. With one technical point, I think.
Sure.
I think you said that some of those profits go toward lobbying. Actually, those companies would count lobbying costs as a business expense, and profits are actually what they make on top of all of their expenses. So folks shouldn't misunderstand. It's, you know, when we say that there's 93.3 billion in profits from one of those companies. So if that's the number, 93.3 billion,
that's collectively.
Oh, from several companies. So 93.3 billion in profit over a certain period. That's not the amount of money they have coming in. The amount of money they have coming in is way more than that.
Sure.
When you take all the money they have coming in and subtract everything that they spend on salaries, on bonuses, on lobbying, on the actual, on legitimate business expenses too, of like operating, you know, their machineries and research and development, all that stuff is, and whatever money they have left over, that's the profit. So that they're just taking that home. And they're just putting that in their pockets and taking that home and spending it however they wish. The lobbying costs would not actually come out of the profits. That comes before profit.
Very, very good point. Very good point. And thinking about just not only in terms of the money that's spent on salaries and so forth, but the cost of doing business in places where, you know, democracy hasn't taken a hold, and they want to make sure that local governments allow them to do exactly what they need to do against the interests of the people. So it's good to mercenary thing.
Excuse me. Mercenary thing. it's good to report the profit statistics as we're doing that as we should. But we should also be looking, and I hope Open Secrets also and our other sources, you know, also will compile data on just what the gross receipts of these companies are, exactly. How much total revenue they have in these periods. And because there's some tricks in how they manage the money to make the profits seem lower than they actually are. So gross receipts matter too.
So, you know, when you talk about what's going on with the oil and gas industry and the Biden administration and so forth, it's important to keep it in perspective. And here's something that will help us keep it in perspective. You know, you heard about the Antarctic melting. Well, the Conger ice shelf collapsed in March. I know that seems like old news, but we need to play that news over and over and over again. It melted away completely. It will never come back. And it's one of the largest chunks to pull off in recent times.
This is a piece of Antarctica, right?
Yep. Now, the thing is, this wasn't even projected to happen this soon, right? Everybody was predicting that it would collapse eventually when we're all dead and gone. But it went quickly because of an atmospheric river of warm air that got trapped over Antarctica. So temperatures rose locally, and it was enough to do in the entire ice shelf. Now, we're getting this information from The Guardian and Scientific American. And Business Insider, by the way, had the best headline. Ice shelf previously thought to be stable has collapsed. Now, no ice sheet in East Antarctica has ever collapsed before. So it's a big deal. You know, the piece that collapsed was big. It was larger than New York City. I mean, it's hard to imagine an ice shelf that's larger than New York City, let alone an ice shelf that large collapsing, right? And so the coverage in the news is pointing out that this ice sheet by itself will only cause a small increase in global sea levels. Now, think about only in terms of, you know, the Maldives, right? Like, okay, it's only going to be small, but who is it going to be small for and who's it going to be large for? Anyway, so first of all, what has it come to when a small increase in global sea levels is seen as insignificant?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no one is seriously interested in what any given piece of Antarctic ice will do to global sea levels. We want to know what all the melting is going to do. Not any given piece of melting. But,
that's,
you know,
right.
The folks, like I said, in the island communities are looking at that and they're just like, yeah, this is the stuff we're talking about. And we're going to, you know, it may cause a little bit of flooding, a little more flooding in Florida, but this is going to put us underwater.
And more is coming. That's the point. I mean, yes, yep. This ice shelf broke off and people want to know what this ice shelf is going to do to rising sea levels. That's not the question.
Right.
The question is, what is the continued melting going to do? The ice shelf is symptomatic of continued melting. This is not, it would be another story if we had reason to think that this was the end of it.
Exactly.
The ice shelf was the only thing that was going to collapse. The rest of Antarctica was perfectly stable. That is, of course, not the case. In fact, right. A large portion of Antarctica is going to melt and sea levels are going to rise significantly. We don't know exactly how much, but it's going to be a lot over time. So like, it's just another example of the news media trying to isolate a little piece and missing the broad picture as a result.
Right.
But this is a big picture. This ice shelf alone was larger than New York City, as you said, Elise. That's how much went away.
Yeah. Right. And there certainly could be more ice shelves that break off that are larger than this one that's larger than New York City. So, you know, we're not just saying, oh, just another piece came off. We might as well just say New York City just broke off and it's melting.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. We are talking about the collapse of the Conger ice shelf in Antarctica. It is the first ice sheet and the eastern side of Antarctica ever to collapse. It is larger in area than New York City. It was previously thought to be stable, and now it is gone.
Just for your own information, Scientific American did a few years ago an issue in which it had this beautiful map. I have it in my office. And it's a map. It says what the world will look like if all the ice melted. And you get to see just how many coastal cities have been are just underwater, and then how many islands have just disappeared. It's something that you should put on your wall and show, and so that it's incentive for you to think about. Every time I talk about ice shelf melting, think about that.
That's a great concept, that map. Conjure ice shelf, we can kiss it goodbye. New York sized piece of ice now melting in the southern parts of the world's oceans. This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
The mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing. Tune into Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright on Tuesday, June 14th at 9 p.m. will be joined by comic book artist Kevin Sacco to discuss his latest autobiographical novel, Seven Oaks, a pictorial memoir of Sacco's senior year abroad in a most distinguished English boarding school, where he learns a discipline and rigor unlikely to be duplicated at Joan of Arc High School in Jackson Heights.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
With a shot of amaretto.
I'll make that too.
Waiter!
Truckin', that's what we're doing. Your independent, locally controlled alternative media is needed now just as much as ever.
Truckin'.
BAI, which counters hate, bigotry, racism, sexism, climate deniers, oppression, militarism, and greed, and works for peace and justice, giving voice to the voiceless, to workers, and those outside the mainstream. WBAI is needed just as much as ever. Now in our 62nd year, because of your support, WBAI is now trucking into phase two of our tower drive. It's a push to continue to raise $250,000 to pay the rent on the room which houses WBAI's transmitter at Four Times Square, which costs a bit over $17,000 a month. Back in January, we raised $80,000, and now we keep on trucking to push to the $250,000 goal, funds needed to ensure WBAI's future through 2022. Please call 212-209-2950 and say you want to contribute to WBAI's Tower Fund, or go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute whatever you can.
Hi, this is Randy Credico, host of Live on the Fly, Assange Countdown to Freedom, on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Join me and a whole bunch of other comedians and performers and musicians and the father and the brother of Julian Assange, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, the 18th of June, at the beautiful Theater 80, St. Mark's. Stand-ups for Assange. This is a critical moment, folks. Will Assange be extradited or not? We're getting close to that. BAI listeners get a discount. So call this number, 917-415-2829, and hopefully we'll see you at Theater 80 St. Mark's on that Saturday, 7:30 p.m., the 18th of June.
This is Julian Assange. Stay strong and keep listening.
previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the